I'm so glad that you've joined us today. Today I'm going to be speaking on creating room. I hope you enjoy this message. Leonie and I were, a number of years ago, I kept hearing this statement. I kept hearing your kids get old and leave home really quickly. And it happens so fast, you know, it's hard to fathom how quick it happens. And I kept hearing it. And when you keep hearing the same thing over and over again, you can either ignore it and say, oh, well, that's their thing, but we got plenty of time, or you can hear it. And on this occasion, we heard it and we thought, we got to do something so that we don't have a mentality where our kids grow up fast and we look back and go, oh, I wish we'd spent more time, or oh, I wish we'd done something in that scenario. So we made a decision at a point in our life where we could have put an investment into a fund, or we could have maybe bought an investment property. But we thought the greatest investment at that point of our life was not furthering our financial gain, but it was actually sowing a seed into our family. And so every 2 years, we made a decision that we would have an exceptional holiday. And when we came back from the holiday, we would actually talk to the family and we'd choose where we wanted to go next. In fact, even on the holiday, we would often do that. Now my kids are not kids anymore, 21 years of age, and my son, Ryan, is 18 and he's away for the first time by himself on tour with the guys doing the social media and stuff. And suddenly here I am with my daughter over at our Northeast campus, and we hardly see her with stuff going on, my son away, and me and my wife now like orphan parents. But it happened quickly. But the great news is this: when I think of my family, when I think about times, I can look back and we as a family joke and we talk about, remember that moment. We made a decision to create room for our family in a certain area, and now we are continuing to reap the memories, the reward of what it is to be, you know, a great family together. We got, you know, there's all the challenges that families have, but in overall, our kids are serving God. Overall, our kids are balanced and involved in church and in relationships with friends and great things happening. And in no small part, we decided to create a space in the midst of all the busyness for us as a family. And now we reap the reward of that. But church, I want to ask you the question, what are you creating space for? What are you creating room for in your life? Because what you create room for is ultimately what you're going to become, or what's going to become of you. And I want to encourage you this morning from this passage of scripture. And if you've got a Bible, you can turn to 2 Kings, or you can look on the screens, chapter 4 and verse 8. Here it is. And this is the story of the Shunammite woman. One day, Elijah went to Shunem. Now, Shunem actually means a place of rest. Okay, so Elijah went to Shunem, or to a place of rest. And a well-to-do woman, notice it says well-to-do woman. When you're reading the Bible, it doesn't always talk about people's net gain, their financial capacity. But in this case, it exaggerates, or it accentuates the point, well-to-do woman was there who urged him to stay for a meal. So whenever he came by, he stopped there to eat. She said to her husband, I know that this man who often comes our way is a holy man of God. Let's make a small room. Or if you take a small out, it says, let's make room. Let's make room on the roof and put it in a bed and a table, a chair and a lamp for him. Then he can stay there whenever he comes to us. One day when Elijah came, he went up to his room and lay down there. Isn't it interesting how she made a room for him, and it wasn't long before it was being stated here that it was his room. She owned it, but it had become his. And I want you to understand that. He said to his servant Gehazi, call the Shunammite woman. So he called her and she stood before him. Elijah said to him, tell her, you have gone to all this trouble for us. Now what can be done for you? Can we speak on your behalf to the king or the commander of the army? She replied, I have a home among my own people. What can be done for her? Elijah asked. Gehazi said, she has no son and her husband is old. Notice something in this He asked her the question, what can be done? And she couldn't come up with an answer. She leaves the room. Now Elijah starts talking to his servant, trying to concoct, what can we do? She's done this for us. What can we do for her? And she's not now speaking on behalf of herself. She's speaking on behalf of the observation, or she's been spoken on behalf of the observation of what she doesn't have. She has no son and her husband is old. Then Elijah said, call her. So he called her and she stood in the doorway. About this time next year, Elijah said, you will hold a son in your arms. And look at her response. Her response is an incredible response, not the response you expect, but she actually says, no, my Lord. She objected, please, man of God, don't mislead your servant. But the woman became pregnant, and the next year, about the same time, she gave birth to a son, just as Elijah had told her she would. Today, I want to talk to you about creating room. What are you creating room for? Because intentionally or unintentionally, you're creating room for what your future will be. You're creating room for what you're going to step into next. And I today want to stir you. I want to encourage you. I want to remind you that God has a plan for your life that's far greater than you can do yourself. So let's make sure that we're creating the right space, the right room for what God is going to do in our life. If we look at this story, it's an incredible story. Because here's a woman who chooses to build a room. The commentators would say that she wasn't a Christian. She was a wealthy woman, a society woman. She had a wrap around her of property. The property she lived on, a beautiful house, but she had a huge property that was an agricultural property. It was producing much wealth. So she had no need. She had no something that she needed for herself. But there was something in this woman that was a secular woman that didn't know God, that saw the holy man, as she referred to him, the man of God, and there was something on him that she wanted in her house. So she made a decision that she was going to create space in her house for what she wanted. And you see, it's important to understand here because we recognize that often with business comes opportunity or opportunism, and often the best business people are opportunistic. They see something and they go after it. But we in the church sometimes, if we're not careful, can actually stand back and wait for something to happen rather than saying, God, you've given us a capacity and we want that. We're going to go after it. The Bible says knock upon the door. It doesn't say stand back and wait for the door to open. You've got to actually do something by faith to actually see that door open. And here she understands the principle that what I create space for is what I'm going to step into. And I want to encourage you this morning and recognize that this woman from this parable, this story, it's a real story, but it's also a metaphor in the spiritual sense for us to recognize that if we create space, what is it that we can walk into? The observations that I see here is that, number one, she sacrificed. But when we think of sacrifice, we almost always think of what we have to give up. And the truth is, sacrifice in its first point is to give up. But in a kingdom economy sense, if we sacrifice in the right place, if we sacrifice the right things, we actually don't lose, we add to. So you see, this woman sacrificed some space. She must have put some finance in. It was a double-story extension. It was a small room, the Bible says. Money wasn't her problem. So there was a sacrifice in that sense, but it was a minimal. But she was sacrificing that people would come into her house. A man would come into her house who she didn't really know, and he could come at will because she said, this is now yours. And I want you to understand that when we sacrifice, it doesn't always have to be through the filter of what do we lose. We need to have a mentality that says in the kingdom, when we sacrifice for the kingdom, we don't lose, we are added to. Something is increased in our life. There's a greatness that is stamped upon us. And you know, in the recent offerings that we took up, Leonie and I decided that we would stretch further than we've ever been in the area of giving. Not because we're just leaders of the church and we should lead by example, but because we felt that if we can sacrifice in this area, it's going to be a sacrifice in the short term, But in the long term, there's going to be favor and blessing that God's going to bring upon our lives. And already we've positioned ourselves and we're starting to give that money on a monthly basis. And there's already a sense in me of stirring myself to believe God for more, because God is a God of expansion. God is a God of add to. And when we recognize that we have a creator, when we create room, he always gives us far much more, exceedingly abundantly than what we expected. So yes, it is sacrifice, but it's a sacrifice that's going to add to our lives. Church, let's not get a mentality of what we lose. Let's get a mentality of in the kingdom. When we sow into the kingdom, we always gain in what God has purposed for us. The second thing I observe here is this room was on top. Don't want to spend a lot of time here today, but it's interesting because it's a picture of covering. It's recognizing that what you put on top, what you have above you, what you choose to come under, is going to determine what's going to be manifest in your life. And rather than seeing that we're a part of the church and, oh, the obstacle of going to church on Sunday, and, oh, you want us to be involved in a small group, and, oh, there's so much pressure to be at the prayer meeting, there's no pressure. We're not putting pressure. We're not applying a pressure. We're putting something before you because we know if you come under that, it's actually going to flow into every aspect of your life. And so we need to recognize that she didn't just build it off to the side or out the back or in a convenient place for her where she didn't have to shut down part of her house while she was building it. She built it on top because she wanted the prophet of God to walk through her whole house every time he came into that place. It's just an observation. The third thing here that I observe is sowing and reaping. The principle of sowing and reaping is in place. When you make a space, and the prophet actively looked then for how he could give back. Isn't it interesting how he used to just eat with her? But when he moved in, he's sitting in the house and he can't help but think to himself, I'm going to do something for her. Look what she's done for me. And I want you to understand that the principle falls into place. When you put the prophet of God, when you put God in his right place, God isn't a God that takes. God is a God that can't help himself but give back to you, pressed down, shaken together. So we need to recognize that the principle of sowing and reaping is running in this story as well. But he says, what can I do for you? And this is where something changes, because a natural woman, probably an unsaved woman, a woman that didn't understand spiritual principles, she understood the secular, she understood business, she understood how to make money, so she applied some principles. But now she's about to step from the natural into the supernatural. And this year is our year of supernatural increase. So I want to consistently be brought to the place of saying, God, how do I step out of what I know to do? How do I step out of what I feel to do, what is good for me, and step out of the natural into your supernatural? Because I don't want to live this year the same as it always has been. I want to appropriate this word. Would supernatural increase be my family's portion? What can I do for you? Elijah prophesies a son. And he says to her before he prophesies the son, can I put in a good word with the king or some of his, if you like, powerful men? And she says, no, I have a family, a group, a people of my own. If you understand the context of what she's saying, I am a wealthy woman. I am a powerful woman. I am part of a family and a lineage that already has power. I don't need the king's power. Notice something. She rejects the natural because she's already powerful in the natural. She doesn't know what she wants beyond that. And that's the problem with our world today. That's the problem with the secular society. They're living to the absolute lid. And in Australia, oh, when you've been to somewhere like Africa, you realize in Australia, we're living right up to the top of the lid. Even for the people who might be doing it tough financially in comparison to other parts of the world, church, I want you to understand, we're living in a prosperous environment. But if we're not careful, we can live to the law of the lid. We can live to the top of the lid in a natural environment, but not break into all God has for us. She's brought this man into the room. She doesn't realize that what's happening is not him offering, you know, some wealth and power, a king's reward, but this is a prophet's reward. A king's reward is all that you can have in the natural. He owns everything in that place. But we step across here into a prophet's reward. And a prophet can offer something that she can't do in her own right. And why is she nervous? When he says, you're going to have a son in a year. A son speaks of future generations. It speaks of a lineage beyond her capacity. It speaks of what in the natural she can't do herself. The Bible says her husband is old. Why is it emphasizing that? Because it's saying he's beyond childbearing capacity. But you need to understand in that society, even if you had a lot of money, if you didn't have a child as a woman, you were actually disgraced. There was something that was missing in you. And she didn't want to accept what he was saying because she'd probably already tried everything and nothing had worked. So in her natural capacity, she said, oh no, don't say that, because what if it doesn't happen? Fear is an amazing defining thing. Fear is amazing gripping, holding us back thing. Even in the church, if we're not careful, we can be caught up in past disappointment. Fear. We can be caught up in broken promises, things that haven't yet happened. But church, I want to awaken something in you today. I don't want you to have a resistant mentality to say, it hasn't happened before. We heard on the screen a great testimony about how I've never really broken through in my capacity to believe God for a healing, but yet he healed me. Church, today, I want you to be stirred to recognize that we're not called to create room just to have more money. We're not called to create room just to have more things and more possession and more power. We're called to go to a whole nother level of recognizing that God has birthing power to heal, birthing power to set free, birthing power to see children where there were no children. Something that goes beyond just our lives, but for future generations. Something is being birthed here. And all she needs to do is be obedient. See, sacrifice is something that we understand, but I want to get you into the mindset of sacrifice that is add-on. But I also want you to understand that here, she's just been asked, told she's going to have a child. No, 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 no. But at some point, she must have actually said, okay, I receive what you're saying, and I'm going to embrace it. And obedience is simply receiving and embracing, not always understanding. See, we want to have it all worked out. That's the natural man. But I want to tell you, the supernatural person says, I trust God. I trust what he said. I trust what he's spoken over my life. And I'm going to dare to continue to appropriate that. Right now, you might be in disappointment. Right now, you might not have the breakthrough you're believing for. But that's why you're here this morning. Because we serve a God who is faithful, who can come through in your circumstance. And if you'll just say, I receive and appropriate what God is saying, he's going to come through in your situation. Let's not just stay at the lowest ebb of the natural. But in this moment, it's obvious she learned something. She goes from the place of trusting her own resources, building something for the prophet, love having him in the house. But now suddenly she has a child. She has a son, and I think the emphasis is on a son because of the lineage and taking her family beyond, keeping the family name. It's not because a son's more important, but in the context of the story, it's talking about future generations to carry on that family name. And she's now learned that, oh, when the holy man speaks, he can do what we can't do in our own capacity. So when she hits a problem, she now doesn't turn to her own capacity, she turns to the holy man. And let's pick it up in 2 Kings chapter 4 and verse 18. The child grew, and one day he went out to his father who was with the reapers. He said to his father, my head, my head. His father told a servant, carry him to his mother. After the servant had lifted him up and carried him to his mother, the boy sat on her lap until noon, and then he died. She went up and laid him on the bed of the man of God. Isn't it interesting how she lived with this, I can't have a child. Now she's got a child. Now the child is born and living and they're enjoying all that it has. And then suddenly the child dies. But the first place that she goes is to the place where she crossed over from a natural understanding to the supernatural. Church, I want you to understand something. There may have been disappointments in your life, but I don't want you to forget what God has done for you. I don't want you to forget when God came through for you on that financial challenge, when He healed your body. I want you to remember that He is a faithful God, and what natural circumstances may look like, step across back to that God who is so committed to you that He's going to come through again and again and again. It may look dead in the natural, but I tell you, we're about to awaken something in the supernatural. She went and she laid him on the bed of the man of God. She's not even now referring to it as her own home. Something has happened. She's gifted something across to this man of God because she recognizes that that's where the supernatural happens. That's where things that she can't do happen. Then she shut the door and she went out. She called her husband and said, "Please send me one of the servants and a donkey." So again, she learned that she built a room and she brought the presence of God, and something shifted over her life. She's learned that if she can't do it in her natural self, she needs to pursue the man of God in this setting. So she pursues him. "So I can go to the man of God quickly and return. Why go to him today?" he asked. This is the husband. "It's not the new moon or the Sabbath." "That's all right," she said. She saddled the donkey and said to her husband, "Lead on. Don't slow down for me unless I tell you." So she set out and came to the man of God at Mount Carmel. When he saw her in the distance. This is an interesting thing. Because she's actually given to the man of God, his senses are aroused to, even when she's in the distance. You know, just off in the, you know, a lot of crowded people and there's people around. He notices who it is. Obviously, their level of relationship and understanding has gone to a new level, that he would be busy doing what he's doing, but something in him actually notices her in the midst of a crowd a long distance away. "Run to meet her and ask her, 'Are you all right? Is your husband all right? Is your child all right? Everything is right,' she said." When she reached the man of God at the mountain, she took hold of his feet. Gehazi came over to push her away, but the man of God said, "Leave her alone. She is in bitter distress. But the Lord has hidden it from me and has not told me why. Did I ask you for a son, my Lord?" she said. "Didn't I tell you, don't raise my hopes?" Isn't it amazing when something goes wrong, we go right back to the seed of disappointment, right back to the failure position. The enemy wants to hold us in a place where it seems not possible. Even though we've seen a miracle happen, we're going back to the place of fear, back to the place of disappointment. "I will not leave you." So he got up and he followed her. Gehazi went on ahead and laid the staff on the boy's face, but there was no sound or response. So Gehazi went back to meet Elijah and told him, "The boy has not awakened." When Elijah reached the house, there was the boy lying dead on his couch. He went in, shut the door on the two of them, and prayed to the Lord. Then he got on the bed and he lay on the boy, mouth to mouth, eyes to eyes, hands to hands. As he stretched himself out over him, the boy's body grew warm. Elijah turned away and walked back and forth in the room, and then got on the bed and stretched out on him once more. The boy sneezed seven times and opened his eyes. Elijah summoned Gehazi and said, "Call the Shunammite," and he did. When she came, he said, "Take your son." She came in, she fell at his feet, and she bowed to the ground. Then she took her son and went out. See, the thing that we need to understand about this story is that she didn't just create room for a man of God, a holy man. We need to recognize in the Old Testament the direct parallel of what a holy man, a prophet of God is the presence of God. So she actually, without even knowing it, made room in her house for the presence of God. Church, I want you to understand we can create room for all sorts of things, but the key question is, are we creating room for the presence of God in our lives, in our homes, in our families, or are we just coming to church? Are we just involved in a small group? Are we attending a prayer meeting, or are we committed to saying, "God, we want to make space, we want to create room for your presence, that your presence would be in any circumstance of our life." His presence was so important that she created room for him. What he owns, he feels welcome, he embraces, he touches, he blesses, he pays attention to. He sees her in the distance. The boy's laid dead on his bed now. She surrounded herself with the presence of God. It's not about what we belong to as a group, a religious expression, a church. It's about us positioning ourselves in his presence. He's here now. He's here when we come into this environment. He's at home when you choose to invite him in. But we need to be people that create room for his presence, because his presence is what makes the difference. She built a room, and on that bed her son came back to life. But here's the thing, the place of sacrifice, as it seemed, was redeemed. The place of sacrifice was actually a defining moment in her life, but God didn't allow her to sacrifice more than he gave back to her. You can't actually outgive God, we say often. But not only that, you've got to recognize if you come into his presence, it's not going to be a transaction where it's all about what you give. Oh, God will always outgive you. God will always give you more of what he has, will always increase your measure. Here in this place that she created, she actually saw death come to life. She actually saw her unfulfilled promises, her greatest fears that she thought could never change, fulfilled. God is a great redeemer. He comes through on every occasion. He restores far much more than we're prepared to give to him. But not only that, he didn't just give her wealth and power. She already had that, the Bible says, but she gave him the seed of a generational blessing. Oh, there's something in every one of us that wants to see a future for generations. One of the reasons our church invests so much in youth ministry and this week in universities and the next generation is because we don't want to just stop at the generation that's now. We want to, for future generations, see the church of Jesus Christ continue to grow and extend. So it's important that we understand that out of her creating a room, she saw healing. She saw the supernatural of God in her own personal life. She saw a multiplication of generation take place because she put herself in the presence of God. But in 2 Kings chapter 8, it's a powerful, powerful story because Elisha comes to her and says, "Woman, you need to leave. There's going to be a time of famine, 7 years in fact." She leaves her house and her land and she thinks it'll degenerate, and if you understood anything about those times, you leave your land, somebody else inhabits it, it's no longer yours. She comes back after 7 years and somebody else has taken over her land. She goes to the king, and as she arrives at the king, guess what? The king and Gehazi just happen to be discussing. They happen to be discussing her miracle of how she was able to have a son when Elijah prayed for her. Is that just by chance or is that God's purpose and design? The very moment she walks in the room, and then Gehazi says, "This is the woman I was just talking about." She says, "King, I've come back. I need my land." And this is what the king says in verse 6. He assigned an official to her case and said to him, "Give everything that belonged to her, including all the income from her land, from the day she left this country until now." So not only did she get the land back, not only did she actually see the favor and the blessing of God with the king, but she actually got a back pay for 7 years, bearing in mind that her land was some of the most fruitful land in the whole land, and she was gifted it back with 7 years of income she wasn't expecting. Why was that? Because she created a room. She made space. 10 years ago, well, about 12 years ago, Leonie and I were pastoring a church and God spoke to us to come and be a part of the team here at Planet Shakers, and we've spoken about it. But you see, she was a secular lady. She was searching. She knew there was something more, so she created space for God. She was obedient and said, okay, I accept that you're going to give me a child. And in the end, his presence flooded her life. 10 years, 12 years ago for us, as a mature Christian, we were in his presence. We'd learned what it was. We understood what it was. And the process, exactly the same words, but it's in the reverse order. We got in his presence. He spoke to us. What? Go to another state? We've always lived here. My parents live down the road. What's going to happen to the kids? New schools. Kimberly's just going into high school. What's going to take place? But obedience was required. Okay, God, if you say so, if that's what you've called me to. And suddenly we sacrificed it all. Got on a plane, arrived, hardly any money, not a car, borrowing somebody's little tiny Suzuki Swift. I remember driving it around. It was terrible. I'm not against Suzuki Swifts. But for my family, and this guy had souped it up a bit, so the suspension was really tight. You'd go down the road. In every way, it felt like a backward step. But oh, in his presence, you spoke, Lord, I'll obey. I'll step out in obedience. I'll rise above my fears. I'll rise above my insufficiencies. And I'll obey. Yes, Lord. Yes, Lord. What seemed like a sacrifice? Oh, the blessing and the favor of God. Watching my kids, my daughter serving the kids out at Northeast Campus this morning. My son serving God, hosting with the social media and traveling with the team. Here we are just a few short years later, but what did we do? Your presence. Some of us are so consumed with what's happening in the natural that we've forgotten that the point of change is when we get in, oh, your presence. And in this environment here today, there's all sorts of things circling your life. Maybe you've gone back to the natural. You're asked by the prophet, you want me to speak to the king? Yes, please. I could do with some more money. Speak to the king. Yes, I need some influence in that area of my business and family. But whether she realized it or not, the Shunammite woman, the lady who was in a place of rest, didn't even know, but she triggered something by saying no to her natural needs being fulfilled. Short-circuited her to another level, which was, I want your presence. But if we're going to see the byproduct of his presence, then we're going to need to create room. Why don't we have a dress rehearsal right now? Why don't we determine to say, here, God, I am. But rather than being like a person who doesn't know God, who's all they're thinking about is, oh, the sacrifice, what have I got to give up? And, oh, I don't really have time and I don't have money. Come on, let's have some maturity in this place. We know that once we've been in his presence, all we have to do is listen to what he says, obey. And then our sacrifice isn't really a sacrifice, it's an add-on. It's an upper room. It becomes a covering. It comes into every facet of our life. Well, I hope you're in his presence. I hope you've enjoyed today's message. And I want to encourage you, if you want to continue to see what Planet Shakers is up to, why don't you get on board with social media or check us out at planetshakers.com.